On October 11th, Feeding Matters invites you to Feed the Cause, the annual signature event to raise funds for education, advocacy, and family support for children with pediatric feeding disorder and ARFID. Held at the beautiful Papago Golf Club in Phoenix, Arizona, enjoy an evening of gourmet chef tastings, mixologist creations, live music, a silent auction, family stories, and more. To purchase your ticket, or become a sponsor, or purchase a ticket for a caregiver, visit feedingmatters.org/feed-the-cause. That's feedingmatters.org/feed-the-cause.
Presented by Feeding Matters, with hosts Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding Does Matter.
Hey everyone, welcome to Feeding Does Matter. Dr. Estrom, Haley, and I are going to be reviewing the Psychology Summit because we just watched it today and we always feel like our reflections immediately after are really important. So you started to write some stuff down from the day. What were some of your things that you were thinking about?
Just my overall takeaways. I felt like we were hearing a lot of just overall drill down, find the why. If you're hearing no, or if you're seeing no, find out why the child is having that reaction to food. You know, find the why for the refusal or the selectivity, you know, like,
yeah,
they're telling us something.
And I like that, especially as we're looking at how we're breaking down the silos between the ARFID mm-hmm. field and the PFD field, because so much of the why overlaps between those two, that it may, yeah. why may start with PFD, where you do still have to like be scouring for a why sometimes, and then it may evolve into ARFID and you may need to ask why and circle back. So,
yeah. And where with PFD, it may be a safety issue. It may be a medical issue. Might be some kind of gut discomfort, or, you know, might be GERD. It might be who knows what. They may have had a lot of invasive medical procedures. We're not sure why, but find out the why, right?
Yeah. Love the why.
Who knows?
Uh-huh.
It could be sensory, could be many things. And then another thing I was hearing a lot, was just about how the silos, the structure of the silos might be a more squishy than we think. It might be more like Jell-O mold.
And I think that's well embraced as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they might not be so far apart.
Well, right? And that so fits in with also what we've been hearing from our families a lot, which is like, don't mm-hmm. put us in a box. This is like care needs to be individualized for our family, for what we're experiencing. And we're hearing that a lot from the professionals too, that there is that squishiness between disciplines and domains. And that's what makes the teamwork and approach so important.
Yeah. And to be conscious of language. And I think,
I love,
you know, always
part.
Going back to consortium and what we're hearing from the consortium members. And I think this also comes from consensus work that we've done. But, oh my goodness, words matter.
Words matter.
We have to be conscious of the language that's being used through all of these processes. So in treatment and in research and just how we talk about everything that we do that's important and how we care for, treat, research, do work around these children and their families and what we do for them and how we can best serve them.
Yeah, and it's a shared language. And so I think even if there are words that people are using that are feeling really activating to someone else, mm-hmm. it's important for us to know that, to be able to try to make the steps, even if they're small steps, to be able to change our language, to be more patient and family-centered, because words and language does really matter.
And I think that's tricky, especially with, there are terms like behavior that inherently are going to come up. They're going to come up so much because that is an established term within the psychological literature.
for
within
decades,
psychology in the field.
It's when you look at things from like a system change perspective, and we use, I probably could go into it at some point, but like, it's like the water's a system change. It's like a whole kind of framework that we use. But some of it is about mindset shift and stuff. And the need for so much change to happen so drastically, so quickly is really hard. And the word behavior is really hard because we know it's so triggering for so many families and for a lot of professionals too. But it is a word that just carries so much in many different fields.
Well, and it's super tricky because, I mean, that there's degree, I mean, certifications or degree, I mean, like, that has that in the name even. It's, and it's not inherent. The word itself is not, it's not a bad word, you know, and the thing that we're talking about is something, it's just something that's observable that people do.
That's what the word means. But I think
right.
because it's been,
and I know it has come to a place where it means things.
Yeah.
Different in a different way for
right.
people. And it can be very triggering. I do understand that. I do. It's not something that's going to be easily addressed.
Mm-mm.
It's going to take a long time to unpack and figure out, how do we look at this? You know, how do people address it? But I do think being cognizant that it can be triggering for certain populations and why it can be is an important first step.
Yeah, very important first step.
And then also, I mean, while recognizing the no, I think it's important to maybe rewind and build from where there is agreement or build from a yes.
Oh, I love that. Breach of inquiry. How can we build on positive success? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where's our
space? I thought there was an undercurrent of that.
Yeah.
Between things.
There was. And I saw so much about how we're listening to families, but I saw a lot of the community and a lot of the professionals listening to one another, which mm-hmm. is always so lovely to see happen in a chat and between speakers and all of that as well. A lot of listening. So you said a lot of the things that were top of mind for me, which was, I think everybody really loves and honors the lived experience and how do mm-hmm. we listen to it? But also how are we adapting what we're saying in the literature, what we're saying in treatment, what we're saying in assessment, to honor what lived experience has told us about activating words, or even just respecting kind of that what we've heard. Mm-hmm. I love the breaking down of silos. You also mentioned that, but just I think it seemed like a lot of people were also thinking about assessment differently, which I feel like is a very tangible outcome out of this, because I think, you know, that's what we're hoping to do in terms of breaking down the silos. It was great to see on both sides. If you're looking at like the PFD side, people seeing some screeners or some tools that were being used on the ARFID side that they were able to then take away and go research and figure out if they wanted to incorporate them into their practice, and vice versa. There were, I think, like individuals within the ARFID world that I think learned a lot of what's happening in the PFD assessment world and were able to take some of that away as well. And so always love when you can have those shared takeaways and really tangible takeaways. Everybody's always asking for like very tangible information to be taken away from these sessions.
Yeah, I do like to see that over in the chat. People are sharing things back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's funny. So it's nice and accessible to be able to have an on-demand conference. But mm-hmm. I know we always really approach our on-demand and live conferences like that everybody is live, because there is a good chunk of the people that have registered that do sign up live. And I know we have challenges with time zones in different countries where not everyone's able to be live. But those that are or that want to be, I think really get like an added value for being able to participate in live, because it is that.
I pointed that out to my student. I said, look, see, here's somebody requested something. And then here's the Feeding Matters staff person telling them it's, they're going to receive it at the end of the day. I said, see how fantastic that is?
I mean, it's literally like a command room of like, how can we make sure we're meeting the need for the community? And we also, it goes even beyond like, how are we sharing resources or changing things or tech support and some of those things? But it's also like, how are we building things for our idea cookie list or what else is there out there that we need to incorporate into education? And so there's all these like ventricles that happen with how you're providing that feedback in the comments section. And I think that's part of what I hope we are able to do is we're responsive to everybody's like opinion and where the field is going. And we're kind of reactive to that in a way that I think honors the lived experience. Or I hope it does. It's an ideal for us that we're always trying to meet. But I think what was cool about this is it was people talking to each other too. Sometimes I feel like it's just us saying like, here's this. But so many people were talking with each other. I loved that.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. What was your one word that you felt like encapsulated the day? It was hard to choose one word.
You know, I'm not good at choosing one word. I always, like this was my, when they asked for one word, that was the things I wrote.
Oh, what we went through was your one word?
My one word was four phrases.
Oh, that's a running joke at Feeding Matters because we try to do too much sometimes. And so we always have to try to say like, what's your one goal or what's your like one priority? Like that whole concept of like focused intent. And we try to like slam everything in all at once. And it looks like that's why we all get along so well because you have the same problem too.
I mean, I would choose one phrase if I had to, and then I would be torn between find the why and build from yes.
Love build from yes.
I like that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the idea of improv where you go yes and.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. My one word was like, I didn't choose one word either. You're right. I think I chose two words. I think mine was about like,
yes, and
yes, and you got it down to two. What was mine was about language and something like, like respectful language or something like that. I think was mine too.
I'd take it.
But I could only get down to two. She did well though. She got down to respect. So that was, you know,
that's good. That's good.
That's one word.
That goes along with trust and language and kind of from building from yes and two. Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a whole theme.
Yeah, it could. It's a good idea out there for anybody listening if they want to do it. Or we could do it in the future. We'll be in our cookie list.
Yeah, I like it.
So where do you think we go from here in terms of the summit or what this like effort is? Because I think it's been building. It's been the consensus on PFD and RFID, and then the consensus on a lot of the like very specific research that's happening in psychology and getting them to align before we then kind of expand it. And then we were able to really incorporate more of the lived experience, and the consortium is able to call the research field to be better and do better for families by incorporating their experience into research. So I think this summit will work on trying to honor and evolve alongside those initiatives. Where do you think that'll take us?
So as Dr. Meg Simeone announced at the end of the summit day, we do have coming up our research roundtable, affectionately nicknamed the Professional Potluck. So that will be a series of researchers and those interested or involved highly in research coming together from different perspectives and talking about hot topics.
Yeah. And really being able to share what they know about what's happening in research with other fields and disciplines. Cause I think what happens a lot and what I've even seen, I mean, we witnessed it in like a conversation of like someone was doing research and they're telling someone else what they were doing in research. And then both kind of had ahas of, oh, we need to be talking about each other, even though we're in different disciplines, different areas of the country. And sharing about that is really important. And have you heard of this thing? Have you heard of this thing? And I think
how we overcame this barrier with this methodology.
Yeah.
Or yeah, there's just lots of subtle things. And it's so hard when, you know, somebody's maybe in Australia and they're doing something very similar, and we don't want to duplicate efforts when there's other huge gaps and another spot that
there's
we could
just too
be
much to be done,
covering more ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This field is so emerging that we do need to be able to be talking to one another so that we are like really making effective and intentional decisions around where what research is happening. And of course, you'll follow where the research takes us, but having those conversations and breaking down those silos is really important as well.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe this could blossom more collaborations between researchers and clinicians.
I hope so. You know, I really
maybe
do.
This could facilitate some mentorships. Who knows? But
yeah,
it's very exciting.
Yep, it is. I think because we have, so on the podcast in a few weeks, I think we have Dr. Marshall coming on, where she talks about how her job has been kind of half clinician, half researcher, which is such a unique perspective, because often you only get a person who's got both feet solidly in one area or the other. And that's where it makes breaking down that silo so challenging, because you're not talking the same language. You're not talking to one another. You don't even have the space or time to do so. So hopefully we can be a small part of that. And then also encouraging the listening to the consortium or the listening to the community members. That is so powerful in that conversation too.
Hi, sorry to interrupt. Did you miss the live event for the Feeding and Eating Psychology Summit? No problem. It's on demand from September 8th through October 31st. Access every session and learn evidence-based interventions for key developmental stages for pediatric feeding disorder and ARFID. Plus, hear directly from families as they share their lived experiences. Eligible on-demand attendees can earn 6.5 hours of continuing education credit. Learn more and register today at feedingmatters.org/psych-summit. That's feedingmatters.org/psych-summit.
So other things that are coming up.
Yeah.
Inspired by our consortium and just by the work of the field at large, are that we're looking into just really the ethics of feeding care.
Yeah. And really diving into that respect piece. I think we heard a lot from our consortium members in their consensus meeting on priorities for the research field to consider around what the impact of this journey has on them. And that can be all of these families have had different perspectives and had different experiences and journeys, but the impact of it has still been really, really challenging. And that's what we heard today in the lived experience shares as well. And so wanting to make sure that we as a field aren't misinterpreting what that impact looks like and how we're thinking about how we need to support this family and what the ethics of that are. And to make sure that we're diving a little bit deeper into this is a huge piece.
Yeah. What could we be doing to help guide different areas of the field?
Mm-hmm.
And to have it be less of an unknown, maybe just to help everyone out. And then for some of the things that we heard from the family's perspective today, and also things we've heard from consortium members and things we've seen
at conference.
And really from, I mean, there's not a huge body of research, but some research with families is that, you know, it's so much more than what you see on the growth chart.
Yeah. I mean, that specifically was shared by the Hutchinson family. And that is a theme that I think is not a new idea to anybody in this field, that has been almost a rallying cry for this field for so, so long. And so is there something that we can do to help support looking beyond the growth chart? And how can we really think of feeding development as its own domain in early childhood development? Also something that's been a bit of a rallying cry for this community. a way to help capture early identification. Because that is also, we didn't talk about it, but that's also a theme that we heard a lot too, was those supports early on and what that looks like helps the long-term view of this issue. And mm-hmm. I think that's also helpful to think about it from the lifespan approach too, because if you're coming into a child's life at 15, knowing the history is really important and knowing everything that's built up to being 15. And yeah, you may be only treating one particular thing at that point in time, but knowing the history is really important too.
Right. Probably didn't just show up at 15. It's yeah. probably a story there.
And I agreed. And I know that there are some considerations of times where it does feel like an immediate incident. But
unless
I
think there was a choking event
still,
or something.
Yeah, but it's still important to know the history of the individual. And I think that also tells the field a bigger picture of what does it look like to help support and maybe prevent or mitigate the long-term consequences that we see while children are learning to eat and what that means for as they grow up into middle childhood, adolescence, and adulthood.
Right. So how can feeding become part of well child visits, well baby visits?
Yeah.
How can that assessment be incorporated every time? And how can it also be incorporated within early intervention screenings as mm-hmm. one of those domains they assess for?
Yes. Yeah. If we're going to monitor in early childhood, we need to be monitoring feeding beyond height and weight, breast or bottle.
Beyond the growth chart.
Beyond the growth chart. Yeah.
100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in.
Oh, good. We got one. You know. I think we'll have others as we develop this and figure out what does that look like to advocate for that. But yeah, I think it's something that will resonate with a lot of people, and I hope it does.
I believe, but yes.
Well,
I mean, I will admit first that I'm pretty biased.
Incredibly biased.
Hello, I have a child with PFD now, but yes, okay. Yes, I think a lot of people will get on board.
Yeah.
Those are great initiatives, Jacqueline.
Thank you. I think this
is so beyond the growth chart, looking into ethics and the professional potluck or the research roundtable.
And if you have a name out there that you think we should call this, please let us know. Because we came up with professional potluck. We
kind of like it. Professional potluck, but.
We'll see where it evolves. But it was a great day. And even though we weren't in the same room, it was still a really good day. And it's always great to see you and connect afterwards on these events. So
I think Feeding Matters is really great at making people feel like they're in the same room as close as possible.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Community building is something so core to our heart. And that's why we really try as hard as we can to try to listen and react and really get people where they need to be, but also build this towards something in the future. And so online community building and being community driven, but still digital first, is something very core to who we are and like the ethos of Feeding Matters. So makes me just happy that you said that. Thanks. It's with a lot of intention. So if you are out there listening, hopefully you enjoyed hanging with us during the day or are enjoying the on-demand sessions. That was the Feeding and Eating Psychology Summit. Today's August 22nd. And so thanks for joining us, and we'll see you online.
Feeding Matters understands the significant financial difficulty that comes with supporting a loved one with pediatric feeding disorder, or PFD, and avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID. Each fall, we open the Family Assistance Program. Since 2019, we've awarded $40,000 to families throughout the United States. Applications for the 2025 cycle are currently being accepted and are due Friday, October 10th. Feeding Matters will award $1,000 grants to 10 families. Learn more and apply today at feedingmatters.org/family-assistance. That's feedingmatters.org/family-assistance.